Good morning and welcome to Making a Change for Good. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
Here's our assignment from yesterday. There's always an implied message underlying what self-hate says. Like the raised eyebrow that is loaded with meaning, every self-hating voice is loaded with implications. Assignment: what message about who or how you are is being implied by the self-hating messages? For example, the underlying message in "my sexuality is my business" is "you can't face who you really are." Record and listen to what you see. All right, here's our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Ashwini. This is Rob from Minnesota.
Hello, Rob.
Hey, Rob.
Hi. My schedule is changing so I can participate more live, and that's great. And
good.
I'm calling because it's exactly what conditioning told me in no uncertain terms I must not do.
Very good.
I just decided to call slightly before I was ready. that's something that I...
or slightly before ego's ready, right?
Ego's ready, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's nice. That helps me see the part that is ready, the quieter part that is ready.
Yes, the part that actually wanted you to call.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. To which ego reacted.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at one thing I'm seeing is, as many people have commented, it's like the sequencing of the sessions. It's like self-care, okay, you know, money, whoa, and then sexuality, whoa.
Big whoa.
It's been so helpful to be able to hear the encouragement along the way that we're really looking for the underlying things that are common to all those things, and that is just so helpful. And what I'm seeing is at the down deep level is just lots of messages about deserving and not deserving, earning and not earning, connected and separate, and sort of being rejected, being marginalized because of being unworthy, and even just saying that, I can see it. It's so much a childhood thing, just various periods of childhood where, again, as you've described so well before, you're breaking rules, but clearly you're being told that very clearly, but you have no idea what the game is and what the rules are.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah. And that whole, that obvious message that there's something wrong with you because you should know what the game is. You should know what the rules are, and you don't. And it's just such a lost place.
Yes, and so that's like just, it's that's resonating in a particular way with this subject matter of, one of the things that I'm seeing, just as always, that conditioning is wanting, when I turn my attention to conditioning for information about this subject, the top story is always, rejection, failure. And it's like, wait a minute, well, it's not really even true, but, it's I get this image of like behind my back, conditioning is sort of repainting the labels on things.
Uh-huh.
When I'm looking at something, the label is, here's reality. This is, this is a good part of life. And then I turn my back and turn my attention, and conditioning sneaks up and paints the word failure or rejection on that. And then when you turn around, if you're not really present, you get fooled by the change of the label.
That's right. That's a perfect description of the process, right? And the reason that we focus so much in practice on bringing those lies that a child bought, believed, bringing them forward so that wisdom, love, and compassion can straighten that child out, you know, can explain the game and how it's played and why this is happening, and that it's not personal and it's not your fault and there never was anything wrong with you. It's critical because that's what ego uses to change those labels, right? When it gets you to look, you, the grown-up, to look over there somewhere, it's back there talking to a little kid, saying, yeah, well, but what's really true is blah, 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 blah. And so it feels like one step forward, two steps back with trying to get through this. And before I lose what the other thing that you said, when you were doing those descriptions of anyway, what I saw was how much this particular conditioning feeds that story of not belonging.
Yes.
Right? Because everybody else knows what the game is. They're all being successful at it. You're the only one who doesn't know. You're right. And so how do you not conclude that I don't belong? Right? And
yes,
then when
exactly.
we're looking at relationships through that lens, most things are interpreted as a rejection. Right?
Yes.
And so it just reinforces it. Yeah.
No, that is really true. It's just your fundamental flaw, conditioning will say, is not knowing, and then it doesn't, nothing ever tells you, you know, you're never told.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why we have to grow up and do it. That's what spiritual practice is becoming the wisdom, love, and compassion that can save that poor human being. Again, for whom there never was anything wrong, but really was given a load of crap to try to survive. Yeah. All right.
So I'm just bringing it into practice rather than letting it be something outside of practice, but centering in practice and extending practice around this topic after topic. It's very cool.
Yeah, and what that reminds me of is the kind of bottom line of practice, which is instead of letting ego have us look outside for what we want and we're told we need, we are moving into becoming that. So if you're in relationship with another, a sexual, let's just bring it back to the topic. You're in a sexual relationship or encounter or whatever it is with another human being. Instead of looking to that other person to provide what we want and need, to offer that first to ourselves and then to the other person. Because we can certainly guess that everybody, from what we can tell, everybody is in exactly the same boat. Everybody is looking outside for that affirmation or that confirmation that you're okay, that you're lovable, that you're desirable, that you belong. And so in practicing offering that, we have it for ourselves, and we can also perhaps offer that to someone else.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, belong first, then.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Then interact.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thank you so much.
Great.
Rob.
Thank you so much. I hope to see you soon. I'm scheduled to come out there for a retreat. Great. Thank you.
Yeah, we're excited. All right.
Thanks, Rob. Sherry, the irony of this whole. The irony that was revealed in that whole conversation is that when we don't know, we are truly with what is. It is the most fundamental experience of being in life, is that relationship with emptiness. And we're socialized out of it because not knowing is considered to be something that is wrong.
Oh, it's the worst. right?
As Rob says, it's really the fundamental, right? It's the place of wrong because everybody else seems to know what to do, and I'm confused about the difference between my experience and how everyone else is behaving. And so I have to conclude that it is my direct experience that I have to abandon. And when that gets put together with that makes you less lovable, that self-hate is so locked in from the very beginning.
I was just, I don't know if anybody else will make this connection, but I was just listening to a description of an old sage who had a student that he was guiding toward enlightenment. And he went along, and one day the student told him something that caused him to realize that the student had passed him by, that he actually was in a deeper enlightenment than the sage had ever experienced. And his response was, "Well, since you have surpassed me, I hope you don't mind if I begin following you." And what you just described in that story are saying the same thing. If we could stay in that innocent place of our own direct experience of not knowing, that's the place of wisdom that would be available to us. But ego gets in there and says, "You can't admit that you don't know. You can't say that. You can't let anybody. They'll hate you. They'll make fun of you," which is very likely. Right? Because everybody is conditioned.
Yes, exactly. All right, here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Ashwini. This is Mira in Seattle.
Well, hello there.
Hi.
What are you seeing?
Oh, well, I had an experience a few days ago. I was at a movie. At a movie, yep. And it got to a particularly beautiful scene that I was really drawn into. And then there was this thought or awareness that something in me was holding back from fully enjoying it. And then the next thing was, oh my gosh, this is such a familiar feeling. This shows up in so many places and connected to the topic that we're looking at this month. And then I went back to watching the movie. Because otherwise, what was I going to do? Just think about how I wasn't enjoying it when I actually was?
So that's really big and helpful, isn't it? First of all, that you were right. that's the advantage of being present, right? So it's not like you were so caught up in the movie you weren't aware of what was going on with you. You're very aware of what was going on with you. And so you were able to see that vague something that is there to stop you from fully going into an experience. You've got to see how you're controlled.
Exactly. Exactly. And it makes me so curious about, what the heck is going on there?
Yes, because I project what you were able to see in this situation is that there was nothing wrong with what was going on, right? It's a movie. It's a scene in a movie that you are responding to, right? And whatever that scene was in the movie, you're actually just watching it and identifying with it. You're sitting in a seat in a theater, right?
Yes.
So it's not like we could criticize your behavior on any level, right? Unless it's watching those kinds of movies. And so you get to see you get to see that for what it really is. It's just there. You know, when I kid about it, I say it's just there to ruin your good time. Mm-hmm. And that's really true. It's there to keep you from going into your full humanity and being present to your full humanity. And what you got to see is, well, that's happening all the time.
That's right.
That's not just happening with something that's sexual or something that's intimate, or that's happening all the time in different places.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it blows up so big that it stops me from even trying something.
That's right. That's exactly right. But you said the magic words. I'm so curious.
Yeah.
Yeah, because now you know that is not you. That is not you doing that. And it is not there for any good purpose. It's not there to take care of you. It's there to control you. And so now you can be on the hunt.
Yeah.
The other thing that I would ask you to watch for is that it's not there to stop you from doing anything that would be bad for you. It's there to stop you from doing what would be bad for it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get really clear about that, it's kind of guiding you in the right direction. You want to go where it's telling you not to go.
Right.
Okay.
And there's something about that, like no beatings if it isn't on its schedule, right? Because sometimes, okay, here's an opportunity, you should go do this because that will help you to see blah. And
right. No.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. In fact, with something Rob said and then what you just said, I just finished doing a little newsletter article that actually speaks directly to that.
Mm.
To that. Getting talked into and getting talked out of stuff.
Yeah.
So,
Very good. May I mention one more thing?
Yeah.
This is the first time that I've called in a really long time, but I've been out there practicing. And the thing that has just been coming into me over and over again is how that constant devotion, how it seems to be always there, no matter what. And I was thinking this morning, like, when did that start? And it got me thinking about, well, it's like I fell in love and now it's starting to hit me. And when did that happen? How did that happen? I can't let go of it. I don't want to let go of it because there was that moment where I was thinking, I was going to that place that you talk about so often of, I'm doing practice so badly. Why am I doing this? But I just can't, it got into me, it got into my heart somehow. Mm-hmm. And it's that thing where it just, in the places I came to was, well, it just is.
Right.
There's nothing else to understand about it.
That's right. And all those expressions, you know, like your heart is leading you home.
Yeah.
And it's just not going to give up on you.
Right.
And fortunately, now you're to the point where you realize, and I'm not going to give up on it.
Yeah.
So now it's us against the resistance. You know, it's us holding hands, me and the heart, me and wisdom, love, and compassion. And ego is going to hit us with everything, and that heart is going to bring me through to the other shore. That's just how it works.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Take care of her.
All right.
Take care of her. All right.
I will.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mira.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Mira. And that is such a beautiful place in practice, right, Terry, when we wake up and realize that we're on a trajectory that whatever ego throws at us is not going to be reversed.
That's right. I'm not quitting. I can't quit on love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that it's sort of related to that curiosity place, right? When we realize we don't know, we get curious about knowing. And that's what gets washed out of it. Because if we stay in the unknowing and be curious about it, then what we get to is where Mira got to, which is what is there is just love.
Mm-hmm.
The unconditional love.
That's right. And it's way stronger than any nebulous force trying to control me.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No wonder there is the resistance, right? The pulling back, that you can't belong or you can't act and you can't find out for yourself with that curiosity what surrender to this moment feels like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you can't enjoy. And you can't have pleasure.
Can't enjoy.
And you can't feel good.
Yeah. All right, here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. This is Barbara from Chicago.
Hello, Barbara. What a big sigh.
Oh, yeah. I needed to breathe.
Uh-huh. Good. Always a good thing.
Oh, yeah, I resonated a lot with the last caller and this holding back. And when I first looked at this content area, I just saw this belief that I just am a person that doesn't need this. I don't have any desire. And it was like this totally, it was even more than repressed. It was like just totally shut down to the point where I actually felt like I didn't have any physical sensation or desire around sexuality at all.
And that caught your attention?
Oh, caught my attention. Yeah. And I, what I realized is that when I talked to friends about it, or I perpetuate that conversation about this person, this is who she is, and and
I'm just
totally
not into
not,
that. I'm just not. And they would all say, well, Barbara, she's just asexual.
Yeah. And when it's totally never been questioned. Well, it's been like building for a period of time, and I understand why, because there's a lot of history and there's a lot of self-protection. But it's totally untrue. I saw that it was absolutely untrue, and it's really this kind of repression that I see showing up around sexuality, but it's a repression of life that I'm really touching right now.
Yeah. Oh, now again, that is just kind of everything, isn't it?
It is everything. It's everything.
That process, this is an area that you would buy. Right? So it's okay, because there's reason for it, and it makes sense. And so it can shut you down in this area.
Mm-hmm.
But to realize, no, it's not just this area. It is shutting me down to life. That's what this process is.
Yeah. This morning I saw that it shuts me down from smiling at another person, from, you know, being open-hearted, from, you know, just all these ways that I just know that I want to live. It's like deadening. And I know that there's this part that's already here that wants to be expressed and alive. And that feels like it can be about sex, but it doesn't have to be about sex, but it is that vitality, that, that life force that I want to, embody.
That's right. And however it wants to express. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because what we're really looking at, again, is the control that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate has over us. And as you're pointing out, has over the expression of life.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's not even just about us, right?
Yeah.
It's repressing life. And so, as you say, when you're living in that controlled, shut down way, you're not available to smile at another human being, to mm-hmm. enjoy a baby, to play with a puppy, you know. Now, maybe it doesn't shut you down to that degree, but mm-hmm. it would if it could, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. all of those are the same spontaneous responses.
Yeah.
And ego likes non-spontaneous reactions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I just, and then so the first thing that where I go to is, oh my God, I don't know what to do about this now.
Oh, well, good, because I have a suggestion, and
okay,
you already said it. You already mm-hmm. said it. So you get out that recorder, and you start doing some two-handed recordings
mm-hmm.
with those aspects of yourself. And the one place that I would encourage you to be careful of is ego is going to want to bring up everybody who has any trauma or problem
mm-hmm.
or,
mm-hmm.
right? It's going to want to put that front and center. And that's not who you're talking to right now. I mean, you can certainly work with those folks, but
mm-hmm.
you want to hear from the sensual, from
mm-hmm.
the one who wants the bright colors and the
mm-hmm.
to sing and dance and just be fully alive, however life wants to express.
Yeah.
And so the two-handed recordings will give you access to those folks who haven't been allowed to express.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I was remembering the little girl that just was so affectionate and so open and
mm-hmm.
that, you know, I just, I know she's there somewhere and she just...
Sure she is.
She's just been really careful.
She was just here right now.
mm-hmm.
Right? She just appeared. That's how you knew to speak of her.
Yeah, she just appeared. Thank you so much.
Uh-huh. Oh, thank you. Have a good time, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you so much, Sherry. Thank you, Adeline.
Bye-bye.
Well, thanks, Barbara. Sherry, we have time for one more caller. So here we go.
Right.
Next caller,
okay.
You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Ashwini. It's Beth.
Hello, Beth.
In Mountain View.
In Mountain View.
Well, no, really
that
not.
Beth.
Yeah, that one. I wanted to participate because of all of the courage that people have been expressing in
mm-hmm.
in looking at this topic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just so inspired by wanting to join in and participate. And
mm-hmm.
I caught up last night with the exercises and saw just how many identities get involved in this topic. And there's
uh-huh.
a widely variant.
Uh-huh.
There's not, you know, there's not just a sexual person. There's the one who wants it to be an enlightenment experience. There's the one who doesn't know how to be sexual. There's the one who doesn't believe that she's attractive. There's the one who, you know, it's like, and then there's the tomboy of like, oh, well, you know, who, you know, what is this all about?
Who needs any of this anyway?
Yeah.
So, again, a la our conversation with Barbara, what you're seeing in that is that sexuality really appears, if, I don't know, if we want to say sexual, sensual, you know, physical
mm-hmm.
appears everywhere.
Yes.
Right? We are physical beings. We are in form. We have these bodies. And they are heavily programmed, it would seem, in whatever way. Number one, to reproduce,
mm-hmm.
because that's, you know, that's just kind of basic biology. But then also to express and to connect in every possible way. So yes, you're going to see every aspect of life expressed through this topic.
Yes.
Right? It's food, it's drink, it's the sunshine, it's it's for you, I happen to know, it's snow. And, right? I mean, it's physical. It's all physical.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that leads perfectly to what I saw in the last exercise that I did last night, which was, you know, kind of that underlying message. And the self-hating was, you know, you're too old, you're not sexy, you're not, you know, there's just, you know, the litany of how I am, mm-hmm. how it mm-hmm. is, mm-hmm. trying to project it onto me. And mm-hmm. and what I saw was there was this real belief that sex looks a certain way. Mm-hmm. And what drops in is that very first reading about this, which was the midriff in the bar. You know, mm-hmm. it's toned, it's not wrinkled. It's mm-hmm. you know, it looks mm-hmm. a certain, so sex looks a certain way. And what mm-hmm. what happened was I saw that, oh my gosh, there's only a certain way that ego wants it to, that it can be acceptable. Whereas what really happened was just the blowing open of the doors of, like, I have no idea what sex looks like for
that's everybody. Right. So two things about that, Beth.
Yeah.
One, it is completely removed from emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's no sex and love component to it.
Right.
Right? Because that gets murky for ego. Right?
Yeah.
Because you could actually want to be sexual with somebody who is as old as you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's that component. And the other piece of it is, I don't know if you remember this, but when you were 21, ego had something to say about your sexuality.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's not now, you've just moved to an age where it can start saying you're too old. But mm-hmm. Before, it always had something to say, right?
Oh.
And we must not lose sight of that. Because,
because
it's always working its angle. And for us to be able to explore, again, how that shows up everywhere, because it does, mm-hmm. the same kind of negativity shows up everywhere, not just in sexuality. Right.
Right. Right, exactly. And that's exactly what I saw. I mean, I'm really glad you harkened back to, you know, my youth, because that was, you know, I don't know anything. It's scary. There mm-hmm. has to be love involved. Mm-hmm. There were lots of stories around it back mm-hmm. then that were stopping mm-hmm. me from mm-hmm. even being able to participate. And now it's just a whole other story that makes me go, well, I'm not sure. I'm gonna.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So two things about that. One, that's the best place in the world to be always, right? Well, I don't know. I'm curious. Let's find out. And the other piece of that just left. So we'll talk about that another time. Yeah.
Okay.
But
great.
That curiosity that I don't know, but I want to explore this because I do not want to be a victim to this any longer.
Yes, the field opens wide mm-hmm. in being able to just go, it doesn't have to be one thing. Now it's like, well, let's see what it...
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We can definitely drop that one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Clearly, I don't know anything.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Thank you.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Beth. And that brings us to the end of the show, Sherry. Our assignment for today, the self-hating message is that as we are not enough. Enough for what? What does that mean? If you were enough, then what? Ricardo Wilson.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Ashwini, and thank you, everybody. Go happy.
Thank you,
go
everyone.
Curiously
happy tomorrow.
Happy. Okay. Bye-bye.